The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcast Network. For advertising information or to find more great podcasts, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com and follow us on Twitter at @RealTheUnderdog.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of the Functional Sportsaholic, or as we like to call it, the Sports Talk Revolution. We are proud partners of Underdog Podcasts, and you can also find us on Podcast One. Today is a special episode because Sam got called into duty. Sometimes, you know, we do actually have to go to work and earn a living, right? We can't just talk about sports all day. So I didn't get, I was going to have Baseball Llama Eric Zimmerman on, but I already used him for a special edition of Get Paid earlier this week. And in short notice, I didn't get anybody else. So you're listening to Sean Ryan today, a solo one-man performance. But, you know, it's actually good timing because, you know, fantasy football is coming down the line. I have a lot of stuff. As return listeners know, I have the Fantasy Football Almanac and Draft Guide. I do a lot of stuff. I make my own analytics. I do the Get Paid podcast as well. So I have a lot of stuff as we are really just calibrating to everybody's fantasy drafts, and also a lot of people have already drafted. So, you know, if you're out there, maybe you're weak at a position, we can talk about some sleepers or maybe some people that you can waive. So give me a follow too. I'm at @TFS_Sean on Twitter. Also, we're on YouTube now. Look for Underdog TV. You can give us a subscription there if you're listening on YouTube. Give us a subscription. It's awesome. So let's see. Today, what are we going to talk about? I am still going to talk about Hard Knocks. I watched the episode. I have some notes. I'm going to talk a little bit about preseason week 3 because I am in it. I've already started watching some of the games. And then also we're going to be talking about, I think, fantasy football. What does the perfect draft look like? I have tactics for how to attack your draft board. And then I have a perfect draft from my point of view, you know, based on some of the average draft position that's out there in the fantasy world. So why don't we just kind of dig right in? I noticed actually today on BovadaSportsbook.com, you know, Hawaii has some lines out. I'm actually going to be with Brad, the next week. I'm going to be in Miami with Brad from the Get Paid podcast, and we're going to be just basically watching and betting NCAA games. So I can tell you, we will definitely be looking at the Bovada rankings, or I should say the Bovada over and unders for college football that day. We'll probably just bet and let it ride and drink a lot, and then probably lose all of our money by the end of the night. But that's part of the fun of it. What else? I saw also on BovadaSportsbook.com that there's an article out. I think it's a little bit older, but there was, you know, early chatter about kind of Philip Rivers and Jimmy Garoppolo as kind of dark horses to win the MVP award. I would probably punt on Jimmy Garoppolo, just because, look, you know, I'm not overreacting to what I saw on Monday night against, I think they were playing I can't remember who they were playing. Maybe Denver. They were playing Denver. Like, I think Denver's defense is better than they're getting credit for right now. And we'll talk about them a little bit later. But also, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's rusty. I think he'll be back. I'm not overreacting to that. But I also don't think San Francisco has a viable chance to win the Super Bowl this year. I do think the Chargers do, however. And especially with Gordon holding out, it might be worth, if you're somebody who bets on some of these player props, it might be worth checking into Rivers, man. He's a really good quarterback at long odds to win the MVP. I would definitely check that bet out. It's worth a fiver. That's what I think. It's worth a fiver. But anyway, let's dig into Hard Knocks. So we're kind of in it. This episode kind of featured Antonio Brown. We've talked on this show ad nauseum about Antonio Brown, helmet gate, what's going on, is it really his feet? Coward came out earlier in the week and said, you know, he theorizes he had Antonio Brown's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, on his show and heard... theorized, he didn't have any sources or anything, but he theorized that Antonio Brown was making a big stink about the helmet because maybe his feet weren't right. I don't really think that's the case. I've lost skin on my feet before. It sucks. You know, you got to use the feet. It sucks if your feet hurt. But Antonio Brown seems to be okay. And I tell you, you know, watching him run routes, he still looks pretty strong as a player. Our criticism of Antonio Brown on this show has never been about talent. It's been about attitude. He's being a little difficult with this helmet thing. But at the same time, if I'm an NFL receiver, right, you got to remember this. If you're wearing a football helmet, you don't have your full field of vision. you have a little window that you're looking through, and part of that window is covered by a cage, you know, your face mask. So to change from one helmet that you're comfortable with to another one, another style, you know, I can understand how that would be a little jarring. You know, he exhausted all of his efforts. I'll be honest with you, I would probably have done the same thing. I think where Antonio Brown is kind of getting it right now, and I think I was a victim of this too, just, you know, on my Twitter and everything. I think he's fallen victim to his what he's put out there this past year in social media, and, you know, all the drama in Pittsburgh, him getting traded, you know, him popping up on other reality shows, that singing show on Fox, all that stuff. You know, when you put all that stuff out there, it's so easy to criticize. And so there were points in the Hard Knocks episode, I think there was a time when, you know, he was just like, you know, everybody wants to criticize me. He was just basically a little pity party after a workout. You know, I'm just going to put out the hard work. You know, it's all work. It's no talk. Well, the dude was talking to the cameras. It's like, dude, if that's what it is, follow rookie Josh Jacobs' example and just avoid the cameras. You know, you never see Josh Jacobs, who is a first round pick. He has a lot of hype about him. You don't see him on Hard Knocks because he's avoiding the cameras. He doesn't want to be on the show. And so, you know, Antonio Brown, he likes the spotlight. He is a little bit of a diva. I'm sorry he is. We'll see where he goes. But I'm not really loving, you know, what I'm seeing from the situation. But I think from a talent point of view, I think he'll be fine. He's back at practice now with the other helmet. He's exhausted all his things. So if he leaves camp again, look, I already think it was an issue him leaving the camp for the second time. But if he leaves camp again, I'm not, you know, I just have some trepidation there, but you know, let's pump the brakes and now we're in it. Now we're in camp. Let's see where we're going. Let's try to keep a positive point of view, because I've thrown a lot of negativity at Mr. Brown this offseason. I also want to note Frank Caliendo. Good for him. You know, he'd kind of fallen back. I think he was doing the touring thing, but you know, he must have been so happy when Oakland got picked to be on Hard Knocks, because then he could throw out, you know, things on Instagram, things on Twitter of him doing the John Gruden impression. Wouldn't you know it, he popped up on this last episode of Hard Knocks doing the John Gruden impression, and it looked like he even made a joke like, I ran out of material 5 minutes ago. So good for Frank Caliendo. He got there. I hope he got paid for that, you know, always get paid, right? Oh, I hope he got paid for that appearance, but good for him at least getting the publicity. Let's see. I noticed my least favorite safety in the NFL already. Abram was complaining about his Madden ranking. He went over to the Madden ranking and was complaining that his stats were too low. And I thought it was interesting, because then you got Darren Waller, who is now the hype is starting to lift off on him, which I'm a little disappointed by, frankly, because I was hoping that everybody would leave him unnoticed. But the hype is starting to lift off on him now. Hard Knocks featured him in this last episode. And what you saw from the Madden guys that went over to Waller, as they say, hey, you're at a 68 rank. And he's like, yeah, you know, that makes sense. I haven't really put anything on tape or on the field yet. So, I mean, he was very humble about it. He's like, hey, you know, I have to prove everything. Whereas rookie Abram was just talking about, hey, you know, you gotta boost me up. I'm fast. I'm this. My coverage is great. My run support's great. Blah, 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 blah. It's just so tedious. So I continue to be, let's say, less than impressed on that safety. But I'm sure he's fine at it player-wise. I just hate watching him on the show. Speaking of Waller, I've thought, and we'll talk about this a little bit later too, I've thought that we saw it last year in Oakland. You know, John Gruden's system, it likes tight ends. If they have a tight end that can catch, that tight end will score in fantasy. And we saw him wide open in the game coverage. Glennon overthrew him at, I think it was the first quarter or something like that, but with the starters, overthrew him. Waller, he should have caught a touchdown pass. Later in the game, Gruden was even talking about putting Waller back in so he could catch a touchdown, but he'd already been pulled out. So the backup tight end, one of the reserves there, got the tight end on what would have been his route. But what we can glean from that as a fantasy community is that Oakland is still going to use the tight ends like Jared Cook was used last year. Darren Waller will be used this year. I can't say that he's going to reproduce what Cook did last year, but I think he's a better bet than not to do so. So he's somebody you can earmark in the later rounds of your draft still. Like I said, if you haven't drafted yet, if you're one of those teams that drafts around Labor Day, and my draft is on Labor Day this year. Unfortunately, hype's probably going to lift off. He's going to be a little bit more expensive than he would be now. But if you're picking this show up right now and you have a draft, hey man, Waller, you know, round 13-ish or something like that, he's probably still going to be there for you. What else do we get? More work. Yeah, I was going to say Antonio Brown, more work, less talk. It would be nice to actually see him putting in work and talking less. So let me just throw that out there. Luke Wilson looks like a slightly younger version of Alice Cooper. Slightly younger. Very weird kind of look. I think he needs to cut his hair. And hey, I like long hair. I'm a guy who had long hair my whole life before I lost it all. I'm not one of these kind of old crew cut guys. But Darren Waller, he is not carrying those locks the way I would want those locks to be carried. And then lastly, Gruden talking. I just found it odd that Gruden, you know, addresses his team about the preseason games like they're life or death. I don't know, if I'm a player in the locker room and I'm hearing him talk about, you know, Green Bay's coming into town and this is a big blah, blah, blah. If I'm a starter, like, what do I care? I'm going to play like two quarters and then sit. You know, to me, it loses a little bit of credibility. Now, if I'm a backup player and I'm fighting for a roster spot, yeah, that's a little bit more important, right? You're fighting for your life. You're fighting for your career at that point. You're fighting for a really, really healthy salary. And that's why I always say, I always find it kind of a bummer in the preseason when it's late in the game. You know, there's probably like, let's say 6-7 minutes left. The game, it's pretty obvious that the coaches just want to get out there. And so the coaches, you know, they'll put in like a fourth string quarterback and then have that quarterback just continuously hand the ball off so that they kill the clock. I find that to be a really big bummer. And I know there's an injury concern, right? You don't want your starters to get injured. But at that point, when it's the fourth quarter and you got your four stringers in there, these players want to play and they want to put stuff on tape. And if you're an offensive lineman and your specialty is pass blocking, like you're a left tackle, you know, you owe it to your players, I feel like, to put in-game competition and that tape together. If you have a four-string quarterback, my gosh, let him throw, for crying out loud. Let him try to earn a spot. Let him try to put some tape out there for somebody else. It's a really big, but I think the coaches are doing these players a disservice, because a lot of times, let's say you're the four-string quarterback, you might get, you know, 20 snaps a week or something like that. You're certainly not playing with the first team. You might be playing with the scout team, might be throwing more, but you know, you're throwing in non-contact drills a lot of the time. Let them play against real competition and put some tape together for these people. We see it with kickers. For some reason, they let the kickers kick. They let like a third string kicker, you know, kick all game long, but they won't let a fourth string quarterback throw the ball and try to earn himself a career. It's a real bummer. And this is a PSA out there for you NFL head coaches. Let your players play, man. Let your players play. You're not really risking much with an injury to a four string tackle, you know, to a four string guard. And believe me, these players want to put tape on the, you know, tape out there for their agents and for other clubs to maybe claim them off of waivers and give them a shot if they don't make your team. So boo, boo for you head coaches out there. All right, let's move it on. Oh, by the way, Oakland, Bovada has them at plus 6,000. So not really a big, a nice odd. And I, you know, their division's so tough. We talked about the AFC West on Get Paid this week. That's a tough division. My goodness, that's a tough division. So Oakland, I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl. I would not put a fiver on Oakland, but they are at plus 6,000. Talking about more playoff or preseason games. So I watched Carolina versus New England. In New England, Brady played. Sony Michel looked fantastic, by the way. I'm going to move him up in my rankings. Cam Newton played, and it was his first action since his shoulder injury. I got to say, he looks thin. Not in a bad way necessarily, but I just don't know why he's thin. If he cut weight because he wanted to be in better shape, that's one thing. But I'm worried that he lost a bunch of like kind of muscle with the surgery and kind of rehabbing. So I don't know what's there, but he doesn't look like big. I mean, he's a huge guy anyway. He just doesn't look as big. And I don't know if that's as, you know, by design or not. But Cam Newton did get hurt, which is a bummer. Christian McCaffrey looked pretty good. You know, he was involved in the passing game, involved in the running game. And the Patriots defensive line dominated the Carolina Panthers' number one offensive line. It was there was no room for anybody to run. Cam Newton was being sacked like crazy. Unfortunately, he got dinged up there. As of the recording, there is no news. I think head coach over there said he hopes that Cam Newton isn't out for long. Hopes it isn't serious. The first thing I saw was like a bone bruise in the foot. We'll see how it pans out. Hopefully, it's not too long, because there's not a ton behind Cam Newton. And if Newton misses, you know, 3-4 games in that division with Atlanta, a stronger Tampa Bay team, and of course New Orleans, you know, Carolina season's derailed if Cam Newton misses, you know, 4 games or something like that. I will say though, you know, DJ Moore, we saw a little bit more of DJ Moore, and he looked okay. I also saw Greg Olsen, and I like him. I didn't draft him in my perfect lineup, which we'll run through later, just because there were other options out there. But Olsen, I like, and he's being drafted late for ADP. Remember that with Funchess gone, there is a lot of untested receiving options, and Cam Newton has great rapport with Greg Olsen. And then also, by the way, I will say this about Cam Newton. Yeah, I remember when Norv Turner first came over to this offense and Cam was a little resistant to throw the ball short. You know, he wanted to push the ball downfield. Back then, I think he still had Kelvin Benjamin and Funchess. He wanted to throw the ball downfield. Well, he is taking some of these shorter passes, and I think that's good. That's going to be good for this offense. And I also like Curtis Samuel. He didn't really pop too much last night when I was watching the game, but Curtis Samuel's pretty good as well. Carolina, by the way, is plus 3,500 on Bovada, so they're actually ranked a little bit better. I think it's the Cam Newton factor. As I said, and Get Paid this week and the special editions and everything, when Cam Newton is bet against in the wider community, he usually plays well with a chip on his shoulder, so that could bode well for Cam Newton owners in fantasy and also Carolina Panther fans. So there you go. Another game I watched Miami versus Jacksonville. First of all, Jacksonville's defense looks fantastic. I mean, top to bottom. I watched the whole game. Their defensive line dominated the whole game. And maybe that's more of an indictment on Miami. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But good for Jacksonville's defense. And as I've been saying, and as Brad and I on the Get Paid podcast have been saying, you know, basically Jacksonville last year, they were just tired because they were on the field all game. They did fine in the first half, and they came in the second half and they were just gassed because the offense couldn't convert a first down. Well, now Nick Foles is in, and we watched watched the game. I think in the first 8 minutes, both teams had 3 possessions. Everybody was going 3 and out until Jacksonville finally got things going. Fournette looked good in his action in preseason, his first action. Foles looked good. Foles was passing to D.D. Westbrook like every other play, to the point where if you're looking for a late round receiver, you got to pay attention because I think Westbrook's going to get a ton of targets. Foles is going to move the chains. This defense is going to be rested. I think Jacksonville's return to form of 2017 is a real thing. So if you're looking for a defense, I think Jacksonville's defense will be nice for you. Nick Foles, I'm not going to draft him. I see him as more as daily fantasy. Fournette, I like, and Westbrook, I like. I think those are my two fantasy guys that will be a factor this year. It's Westbrook and it's Fournette from what I'm seeing. Jacksonville, what is Jacksonville? Let me go look at their odds. They're probably not going to be that strong. Let's see. Bovada has Jacksonville at plus 4,000. So there you go. They're not really high on them. Miami, meanwhile, Bovada has them at plus 15,000. I don't think that's going to be a good bet for you. Fitzpatrick, I think Rosen looks better than Fitzpatrick. But as I've been saying, I think Fitzpatrick will be served very well to learn a complicated offense and just take 8 games off, maybe even take the full season off, bench him, okay? I think he can be starting now, but it doesn't really make sense to me on this Dolphins team to throw him to the Wolves, especially given what I saw from that offensive line last night. Let Ryan Fitzpatrick run for his life, try to distribute the ball. But I do think that, you know, I do think that Fitzpatrick's all right. He is a backup. He's a good backup to have, but Rosen, this is going to be Rosen's team. I think Miami's probably excited. I feel like Miami has the quarterback of the future there. We didn't see Kenyon Drake because of the injury. Bellage had no room to run all night. I couldn't even give him, I think he escaped for one run. So if you look at his stat line, it was awful, but I'm not exaggerating here. Literally on like every play, he had 3 Jaguars through the offensive line bearing down on him. So it wouldn't even have shocked me if he had less than 10 yards rushing at the end of the night on a decent amount of carries. But Miami just could not block anything. They were leaking like a sieve. It was bad news. So once again, Miami, Bovada has them at plus 15,000. Not great. Not great. Let's get into the fantasy football side of things here. So I want to talk a little bit. So obviously you have the Fantasy Football Almanac and Draft Guide, which we talked about, we've been talking about. And if you've signed up for that almanac, there's in the draft strategy guide, you can send me an email with the promo code and I will give you rankings updates. That's part of what I do, right? In addition to scouting these preseason games for fantasy insights, I always update the rankings and send them out to everybody so that they have them. And I republish the book. So I think we're actually the most recent publication right now in August 14th. But this year, I am big on running backs early and take your time on every other position. Receiver, if there's good value there, don't hesitate. For example, I like Tyreek Hill in the second round this year, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, just to give you an idea in my perfect draft, which I'll talk about in a little bit, I didn't draft a quarterback until round 10, and you'll be surprised at the quarterback I got in round 10. So I was all running back and receiver for the first 9 rounds. And I would suggest that you do that as well. Like I said, you know, if Mahomes slips to the 5th round or something like that, take Mahomes, you know. If Ertz slips to the 4th or 5th round or Kelsey, take them. You know, I have no problem with that. But what I'm seeing, and a lot of readers are emailing me and they're saying, hey, you know, Sean, what do you think if Kelsey's there in the 2nd round, should I pop? And my answer is I never draft a tight end, no matter who, before the 3rd round. I need running back, or running back wide receiver in those first 2 rounds. I need that. And I'll get into that a little bit too. So in my almanac, I don't publish these, because more often than not, they really serve as a source of frustration for people, and they can be polarizing, so people, you know, get angry about my analytics. And the reality is, the reason people win DraftKings and everything is because they can pick the quote-unquote the daily fantasy sleeper. The analytics spit out who is going to do well against a given given competitor in a given week, right? So there are going to be some weeks where, last week is a great example, where Austin Eckler was a top 5 running back just because of the matchup. And when I put some of those competitive advantage scores out there last year, I would get nailed because people, you know, I'd have Eckler ranked ahead of maybe that week, they, you know, Todd Gurley was playing New Orleans or something with the top ranked rushing defense. And maybe I didn't put Gurley in, or maybe I didn't put Zeke in or something like that. And I had somebody like Eckler or Tarik Cohen, a pass catching running back in a PPR format, higher than these guys. And so people came back and say, you know, you're nuts, you're crazy, you're a loser, blah, blah, blah. And the bottom line is, analytics, when you put those out there, you know, they're science driven. So they take kind of the emotion out of it. They're designed to do that. But I found that people just get really pissed off when I, you know, rank, you know, a really good running back a little bit lower. And so my competitive advantage throughout the season, I put these together, but I don't publish them in the book. But far and away, my number one player for competitive advantage is Tyreek Hill. He had a competitive advantage, which means a weekly, if he's in your lineup, he gives you plus 19 over the next, you know, the typical roster, starting another receiver. And I calibrate the scores. I'm not going to go into the math behind it, but he had a score of plus 19. The second ranked player in that system was like a plus 7. Or maybe a plus 5 or something like that. So Tyreek Hill was that much better than everybody else. So I like Tyreek Hill. Kelsey was very high on that list. He was like a plus 4 or plus 5. So even though I like Kelsey, I like his competitive advantage score, strategically, I think it makes a little bit more sense to focus on running back because they're a little bit more scarce to me. But I can't begrudge you if you're somebody who wants to take Kelsey in the 2nd round, or maybe Ertz or whoever. I don't, you know, I'm not arguing against that. I'm saying my personal preference is to always wind up with either 2 running backs or a running back and wide receiver in the first 2 rounds. So there you go. That's kind of my loose line strategy. I'm going basically running back and wide receiver. After round 6, I want to have 4 running backs, 2 wide receivers. You know, round 7, 8, and 9, I'll see who the best available is at those positions. If something happens, you know, my draft guide is tiered, so it's basically calibrated to where if one of these players drops too far, it will note that and will say you should pick this person, right? So like I was saying, if Mahomes, who's going in the 2nd, 3rd round in a lot of drafts, if he drops to round 5, then of course you're going to take Mahomes, right? And that's what my draft guide does. So I'm not hard-lined in that, you know, draft in the first 6 rounds, draft 4 and 2. If somebody falls, you always take the value. But what my guide and what my strategy does is it really outlines the best value for your competitive advantage team. So there you go. There's a loose line strategy for what I'm doing. Now let me talk about my perfect fantasy football draft. So what I did is I went to Fantasy Pros. They do a great job over there. I looked at their PPR format, and I am drafting as if I had the number 5 pick right in the middle of a 10-team league in a 15-round draft. So this is really the format that my league, my personal league, follows. It's 15 players. You start a quarterback. you start a you have to start two running backs, you have to start two wide receivers, and you get one flex. It can be wide receiver, tight end, or running back. Then you get a kicker and a defensive team. We don't do individual defensive players. So there you go, 15. It's a thin roster, and it's you know, you have to make those picks count. So I'm going to run through my perfect draft, and I'm a guy that will stream a backup quarterback. So I stream the bottom of my bench depending on needs. So, and I stream backup tight end, and I stream backup defense generally as well. I might react to that. You know, if I have the top defense, if I have the top kicker, I'm not going to waive those people. I'll waive some of my lower bench players to keep that competitive advantage. But let me run through. So once again, 10 teams, 15 rounds, and you have to start two running backs, two receivers. So, and I was the pick number 5 in the snake draft. So I pick 5, 16, 25, 36, so on and so forth. So at pick 5, I'm taking James Conner. His ADP is 11. Some people are going crazy about that pick. I pick Conner because he's going to be used all season long. I don't think that Jalen Samuels is going to be the guy that cuts into those snaps. I want productivity. I want receptions. I think Pittsburgh's offense is going to be better than advertised. I'm going to take James Conner, so he's my starting running back. I pick him at number 5. At pick 16, I take Tyreek Hill. Now, I like Tyreek Hill. Like I was saying, he is my top competitive advantage player, but if you look at average draft position, you can get him later. So I'm earmarking Tyreek Hill for round 2. Luckily, he was still available right at that 16 spot, so that's who I took. And so now I have Conner, I have Hill, I have two, in my opinion, top players at top positions, so I like those guys. Now, at round 3, here's where I start kind of going running back. I love Kerryon Johnson this year. I think he's a definite second-round talent. People are a little bit down, I think, because C.J. Anderson popped over to Detroit. But remember, Detroit waived Theo Reddick, so I don't think it's going to be a three-headed monster. Daryl Bevel's now the offensive coordinator. They're going to be running the ball. C.J. Anderson, to me, he looks a little out of shape. I don't think that he's going to be able to hold a candle to Kerryon Johnson's productivity. I love what Kerryon Johnson. He could damn well be a top 10 running back by the end of the year. And remember, Bevel's system produced Adrian Peterson. It produced Marshawn Lynch in Seattle. It's looking for a running back. It wants a running back star, and I think Kerryon Johnson can be that star if he can stay healthy. Round four, Marlon Mack is still there in round 4 for me, so I take him. He looked fantastic in preseason week 2. He's the only running back dating back to last year that when he's in the game, Indianapolis can consistently get first downs. He's a 3-down type running back. Yes, I know they have Hines. I know Hines will catch the ball, but Marlon Mack is going to get the lion's share of the snap distribution. So now I have Conner. I have my second running back is Kerryon Johnson, who I love. And now Marlon Mack is my flex player. So I love that. And 5th round, Cooper Kupp is still there. I like Cooper Kupp. Last year, he had a lot of touchdowns. He might even have led the team or maybe just fallen off even after blowing out his ACL. I like Kupp. I like his availability. I like that he is basically, in my opinion, the guy that kind of moves the chains for the Rams, and he's the big redstone threat for Jared Goff. So I like him. For him dropping in the 5th round, I was thinking about taking another running back there, but I like Kupp, so I'm going to take him, damn it. So there you go. I have Kupp and Hill as my starting wide receivers. Now we're getting into the bench of those two players, but now we're in round 6. Calvin Ridley sitting out there. I was toying again with another running back, but I like Calvin Ridley. He's an emerging player. He's got Julio Jones drawing coverage on the other side. Dirk Cutter is a system that wants to throw the ball. Ridley's explosive. He's a nice, you know, kind of guy that can get the crossing routes. He can get behind. He looks like maybe a younger but slower version of DeSean Jackson. I think he's going to be great this year. Calvin Ridley, I'll take him. Then round 7, the decisions start to come. Austin Ekeler, if I picked Gordon earlier, I would probably take Ekeler here just to handcuff, and I was thinking about it, but I like Kenyon Drake, and even with the offensive line issues that we were just talking about, I like Kenyon Drake in this Miami system. I think he's going to get receptions. Yes, I know they have Walton. Yes, I know they have Ballage, but I like Kenyon Drake, so I'm going to take Drake and put him on my bench and take the flyer on him. Round 8, I'm going to take either Christian Kirk or Larry Fitzgerald. I'm leaning Larry Fitzgerald, but here's what we know about Arizona. They play in a tough division. They're going to be throwing a lot of short passes, quick passes, a lot of quick outs, And they're going to be behind a lot this season. So they're going to be throwing the ball. I think Fitzgerald and Kirk will both score very well. So to get in a PPR format, if I'm looking for basically somebody to plug in on bye weeks, if I can get somebody that catches a lot of passes, you know, maybe a six catch, 80 yard, zero touchdown type game, that's fine with me for a backup flex. And to get that kind of value in round eight, I will take it. Round nine is where I start looking at quarterbacks, but there are still a lot left. Drew Brees, for example, is still left. So if you're getting really antsy about taking quarterback, there's still a lot of talent there. But I, after watching preseason week two, love Emmanuel Sanders. Joe Flacco can get the ball down the field. Emmanuel Sanders looks like he never had an injury last year. His recovery is just incredible. I don't know what kind of new age, space age science came together to get him back on the field and have him looking as good as he looks, but holy smokes. And for him, I think he's probably like, wide receiver three, probably a starter caliber receiver that I can get in round nine. Yes, I will take that, please. Round 10, I decided just because he's still there, the number five quarterback on my board, I'll take Jared Goff and pair him with Cooper Kupp. Why not? Like I said, Goff, he's higher on my board, and there's just so much talent down there that I don't even have to draft a quarterback. But, you know, why not? Because I have Kupp, I like to stack those wide receivers and quarterbacks, and Goff is a good one. You know they're going to score, and you know McVay is going to be able to scheme open some touchdowns there. And they throw to running backs on the goal line. So I like that. There's nothing not to like about Jared Goff, especially in the 10th round. Holy smokes. Round 11, I'm going to take my choice here is between McCoy and Shady McCoy and Peyton Barber. I'm going to take Barber because I think he's running a little bit stronger. McCoy, I think, is on his way out in Buffalo, but I will say that he looked pretty good in week two in preseason. It remains to be seen what Buffalo is going to really look like this season. But, you know, Josh Allen was throwing the ball into the flats to McCoy. So in a PPR format, I think McCoy, you know, if you're looking at round, what are we at, 11, McCoy there, I think is definitely worth a pick. I think he's a good one. Barber, though, I'm taking just because there's the potential that Barber could end up as a three down back in a Bruce Arians system, the one that kind of sprung David Johnson. I don't think Barber has David Johnson type talent, but the opportunity could be there for him, and I know he'll get some goal line carries this year in Tampa Bay, so I'll take Barber round 11 all day. Round 12, here's where I get a little bit screwy, right? So remember, I have a 15-round draft, and I talk about competitive advantage. Well, I'm going to take Greg Zuerlein, Greg the Leg, and now everybody's like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you drafting a kicker? Couple reasons. One, I want to start the run on kickers. I want to start it even later in the draft, right? Round 12. And when I start the run on kickers, I do two things. One, I have competitive advantage. Greg Zuerlein is worth about 2 points per game more than the next kicker. So automatically every week I can basically bank 2 points. That's what that competitive advantage means. I already start with a plus two, a 2 point lead for having Greg Zuerlein. You know, a backup flex or a tight end at that area, they're not giving you that kind of same competitive advantage for your roster. I need a kicker anyway, and all teams are required to draft a kicker. So if you start the run on kicker, everybody else is going to be catching up, and you can get some of these unheralded guys that you want later, and I have some guys that I have targeted that is on nobody else's radar, so I'm very comfortable I'm going to be able to get them late in the draft. So I'm going to go with Zuerlein there. I know it bucks conventional wisdom, but I want to be first at kicker rather than get in the middle there. Another guy, if you miss on the Zuerlein, I think is Harrison Butker, just because Kansas City is going to score a lot of touchdowns. So if you miss out, there you go. And I think Baltimore is going to get a lot of field goals this year, so I do like what's his face there? I can't remember his name, but the opera singer there in Baltimore. His name will come to me after a while, but I can't remember offhand right now. So round 13, I'm going to take my tight end. You have Darrell Waller. By the way, Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers are still out there at quarterback. So if you're antsy that, about the quarterback and you need a backup quarterback, you can get Tom Brady as your backup quarterback in round 13 if you wanted to. But yeah, I'll take Darren Waller. I think he's at tight end. You know, I missed out on all the big guys early. So I'll take the guy that I think is going to pop and be a top 10 tight end, and I'll take him in round 13. Thank you very much. He's one of those sleepers that I think I can get later. That's why I picked Greg Zuerlein a little bit early. Round 14, I'm going to go ahead and take Denver's defense. Remember, Fangio is the defensive coordinator now. They have nice pass rushing. They have good coverage. I think Fangio is going to have this team dialed up. I think they'll be definitely a top five defense. They're not really on anybody's radar. I'll take Denver. I'm fine with that. So I will draft them around 14. And then round 15, while everybody's catching up on kicker and on defense because everybody waited, I can get my sleeper of the year choice. I have my choice between Quincy Enunwa in New York, and I have my choice between him and Cole Beasley. From what I'm seeing, Buffalo wants to use Cole Beasley like New England uses Julian Edelman, which makes sense because the offensive coordinator spent like 8 or 9 years in New England. Cole Beasley, I always thought, was underutilized in Dallas. He's been used early and often in preseason in a PPR league. Again, round 15, I don't think you can find much better the value than that. I know he's significantly overdrafted. His ADP is much lower than that, but I want him on my roster. I want to have the right of first refusal there, so I will take Cole Beasley. There you go. There's the show. It gave you a little bit of fantasy insight there. Let me look at Buffalo, by the way. What are the Buffalo's? Bovada has them at plus 10,000. I've had it on good authority that a lot of people in Vegas and in betting circles are taking Buffalo, taking the over on the wins, and putting some Super Bowl money down. Even though I don't think I'd bet a fiver on them, but those are pretty low odds. They're under the radar because of the young quarterback, but they're doing some good things over there. I was down on them early in the offseason, but I'm becoming more enthusiastic. They're an interesting team, and the defense is definitely going to play tough in Buffalo, so there you go. Well, everybody, I appreciate you. I appreciate it. If you could subscribe to us, it helps us grow this thing, and that's what it's all about. Please, leave comments. Follow me on Twitter, @TFS_Sean. I'd be curious to hear what everybody thinks. Thanks. Go out. Be good.